Welcome to the Trailline Podcast. The following episode is part of our mission to help educate and improve the systems of thousands of traders around the world. The podcast is brought to you by Traderline University, which features masterclasses and resources taught by world-class training experts and educators. For instance, you can sign up and learn swing trading directly from Oliver Kell, money manager and the U.S. Investing Championship record holder. You can also learn directly from market legend Stan Weinstein, in a one-of-a-kind stage analysis masterclass to master the system that Stan has used for decades to outperform and advise institutions. We also have specialized classes from Jared Tendler on trading psychology, John Boyk on the historical blueprint for trading success, and from the excellent lifecycle trade team of money managers who specialize in trading IPOs and super growth stocks. To join the thousands of traders who have improved their systems through our masterclasses, visit traderline.com or click the link down below in the description. Now sit back, relax, get your notebooks ready, and enjoy. All right, welcome back, everybody. It's my honor to present the second presenter of day two of the Trailline Conference, Chris Bruna, an extremely experienced investor, and he'll be talking about when to sell, a really important question. It's so easy to buy stocks, but the key question is when do you actually go ahead and take profits after a long trend? So, Chris, thank you so much for being a part of this. And I think this presentation will help a lot of people, especially those with longer time frames. So thanks so much for, doing this.
Sure, Richard. Thank you. I just want to say thank you to you. I know we've done this a couple of times. This is my second time at the conference. We did your podcast in the past as well. So I just want to say thank you to you and the viewers for presenting to you guys today.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
All right, so what we'll do is I'll start off with just kind of giving a background on who I am. I think some people out there know who I am. Some other people might not. So first thing is I was born and raised in New York. I went to school in New England. I live in New Jersey with my wife and two kids at this point. One thing I just want to clarify to everyone out there, I don't do this professionally. I think I'm pretty clear on FinTwit, on Twitter, that I don't do it professionally. I don't work with Wall Street firm. I'm not affiliated with anybody, a financial entity. I don't sell any products and I don't sell any services related to FinTwit or anything with the financial markets itself. So one might ask, well, what's your qualifications? Why are you here? Why are you presenting at the trading conference? And it's, well, I've been investing for 25 years. I put my first trade on back in 1998. I was actually in college. I opened up a TD Ameritrade account, which ironically, they just closed last week. My entire account was just switched over to Charles Schwab. So I placed that first trade back in 1998. My father was a trader. He owned a restaurant, kind of got me into stocks, options, things along those lines, pre-TD Ameritrade type days. So I used to look at the newspapers. But long story short, I went to college to become an architect. I practiced architecture for about 7 years, focused primarily on historic preservation. And then over the last 15, 16 years, I kind of made a transition and became a project manager, owner's representative. So what does that actually mean? What do? I work in the real estate world. So my experience is really with commercial interior, corporate type projects, core and shell, built to suit development type projects. I've done about 4 million square feet with a value in excess of about $1 billion over the last decade, maybe 12 years or so. I work with clients in various industries. So it could be from life sciences to financial services to healthcare to professional services, anything along those lines. And what I do is I although I don't design anymore as an architect, I work with architects and engineers and contractors on a day-to-day basis. And we're based on the extension of a client. So if you take a life sciences company, for example, and they're looking to build a new facility, their expertise is in life sciences. They may have some real estate people inside the firm itself, but they'll hire us as an extension of their firm to come in and kind of build that entire team. So build the architectural team, build the rest of the design team, so engineers, IT, AV, security, so on and so forth, and eventually bring the contractors on board. So whether it be a general contractor or a construction manager, and then we develop budget schedules and kind of build those entire projects from start to finish. Small jobs could be 6 to 8 months. Large jobs can be 4 or 5 years. It's development out of the ground. Good example, some clients I've worked for, some of them are publicly traded companies like Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, great stock. Unfortunately, in the past, I couldn't talk about this when I was working with them. I started working with them back in 2009. Stock was trading like $22 a share. By 2015, it was trading at $600 a share. And we were doing master plan for them. And we saw the large expansion that that company was going to have at that time. It was a stock I owned. I just could not tweet about it. I actually had to sign a waiver with the company that we couldn't talk about it because I knew a lot of information of what was coming up. TikTok ByteDance, we did their headquarters in Manhattan last year, which was a great project. J&J, Bristol Myers Squibb, Gartner, L'Oreal, MetLife, NYU Langone Medical Center. So it just gives you a wide range of the types of projects that I work on in my day-to-day life. What's really interesting is I do work with a lot of publicly traded companies, and I do have a lot of insight as to what they're doing with their campuses and how their expansion's going. So take a company like Gartner. It has a ticker symbol IT. I started working with them in 2010. There's another stock that's done phenomenal over the last decade. And they kind of gave us a vision as far as how they were going to expand, how they were hiring. So it gives me a lot of other unique insights into certain companies that I'm working with as well. That kind of goes back into my trading experience. So in any event, I just want to give that a little bit of a background to the viewers out there, who I am and what I do professionally in the real estate world and how that kind of starts to relate to what I'm doing in the investing world. So with that said, we'll jump right into the presentation. All right, we'll start off with the agenda. So I'm going to start with an introduction of when to sell. And we're going to ask some questions because one of the toughest things to do in the market is to know when to sell. And there really is no perfect time to know when to sell. So hopefully, as I go through a couple of sections today, and this presentation is going to be mostly technical based, it'll give you some ideas and maybe some tools in your arsenal of when to sell when you have a stock that's either gone up substantially in a stage two pattern, or a stock maybe you buy immediately and something goes wrong and maybe you just need to get out of that stock basically day one. So we'll start with stage analysis. I'm going to primarily focus on stage three and stage four. So the top end phase and the decline phase. As a little bit of added bonus, I'm going to go percent above the 200-day moving average. So that's another slide that I'd like to take you through. And I think it's a key indicator. And we have some stocks right now that have run up a lot here in 2023 that are getting a little extended, strong stocks, good stocks. But it might be some, we might be nearing the time to take some dollars off the table here. Next, I'm going to jump into market breadth. Everybody knows I love to talk about the new high and new low ratio. And this is more of a macro view into the market. This gives you a really good idea of when the change in trend is actually going to come with market breadth. Second to new highs and new lows is going to be percentage of stocks that are trading above their own 200-day moving average or trading below. And when these levels get really low, we know we're actually in a tough market, possibly heading towards a bear, or we're going to start trending down. So we'll take a little bit of a look at that. Next is the market cycle. What is the direction of the market itself? So about 75% of all stocks out there will follow the general trend of the market itself. So we need to know where are we with the general market cycle. If anybody follows William O'Neill's CanSlim, the M in the CanSlim stands for the market. So we want to know what is the direction of the market. So we'll talk about that. And then lastly, but just as important, is the fundamentals. Now, we're going to focus on earnings and sales, which I always focus on the buy side, but they're also very useful on the sell side. When earnings or sales start to actually go from positive to negative, or maybe you have sales that are 50, 60% Q over Q and they start to drop to maybe 20% or 15%, it's a little bit of a red flag to say, hey, things are starting to slow right now. And if you start to couple that with the technical side, maybe it's time to take some shares off the table. Maybe it's time to get out of the position altogether. And last but not least is profitability. As you get into a bear market like we did last year in 2022, the stocks that actually held up a little bit better were the stocks that were profitable versus the stocks that were not. So most of the market went into a stage four decline. Most stocks went down significantly last year, but the stocks that were profitable probably only went down anywhere from 30% to 60%, which is still fairly significant. But the stocks that were not profitable went down 70% to 90% plus. And that's a big difference. And also the profitable stocks, what we're seeing here in 2023, are the first stocks to actually shoot back up as we come out of that bear market and go from a market stage one to stage two. So that's what we're going to cover today. So we'll jump right into the first slide, which is the introduction of when to sell. And I asked that question, is it possible to know when to sell? And many people say, maybe it's not, because there really is no perfect time to sell. But one key thing I like to point out is selling techniques are far more complicated and subject to considerably more emotional pressure. And I highlight that word emotional than those of buying. When you buy, you're not fearful. You buy in hope that the stock is going to go up. And it's one decision you have to make. It's, hey, I went out there, I did some research. I like this stock fundamentally. I like the stock technically. I'm going to buy it. That's an easy decision to make. Now, once you own that stock, there are dozens and dozens of questions that kind of start to creep into your mind. And then emotions start to kind of boil up as you buy that stock. For example, some of the concerns and questions you have is, if the stock goes up immediately, first question you have is, well, will it go up more? Do I want to buy more? Did I buy a full position from day one? Did I scale into the position? Should I scale and should I pyramid a little bit further now as the stock has gone up? Or you have the opposite question. Should I lock in profits now? So some of the ways to kind of diffuse those questions is to have a plan before you go into a stock. So when you buy a stock, are you buying it for the short term? Are you buying it for the long term? Are you buying it fundamentally? Are you buying it just on technicals? Are you actually buying it because of both reasons, fundamental and technicals, which is more of what the CanSlim approach is. And that's more of what my approach is. So have that plan because there's always going to be volatility in the stock where it's going to go up and down. Nothing goes straight up. Nothing goes really straight down. But those questions start to come in. Now, on the flip side, if you buy a stock and it goes down, you ask, well, no, is it going to go down more? Should I take a small loss now? Should I cut my loss? I mean, if you listen to William O'Neill, he says cut your losses 7 or 8% after you buy a stock if it doesn't act appropriately. well, can you afford a larger loss, or what is your overall game plan? On the opposite side of the stock going down versus up, do you actually pyramid down? I don't advise that. That's not my style, but some people actually like to buy down and get a lower cost basis if they truly believe in a stock at that point. Now, if a stock goes down and then it starts to kind of travel back up to your buy point, you might ask the question, all right, now it rebounded, should I sell now or should I continue to hold? Because maybe now it's back on my plan. So these are just some of the questions, and there's many, many more questions that people ask. And this is what makes selling so difficult, is there is no real answer and there is no perfect time to know when to sell. The key objective, as I put on the slide here, is to avoid the wrong time to sell. What does that actually mean? So I put a quote in here from Justin Mamis, and there's three books at the end of the presentation that I highlight that I've really kind of built my knowledge of when to sell around. Justin Mamis is one of them, and he has a book called When to Sell. He writes, the decisive act of selling may turn out with hindsight to be a mistake, but the indecisive act of not selling can turn out to be a disaster. So what does that quote actually mean? If you look at this stage analysis chart on the right here, if you had a great stage two run where a stock maybe went from $50 a share to $250 a share, but now it's starting to flatten out a little bit and it's kind of trading in between a range of maybe 220 and maybe 260 over a number of different months, and then it starts to violate the 200-day moving average. Well, if you start to break down into a stage four, now you're below the 200-day moving average and you don't sell and the stock drops 60%, well, that's the wrong time. You made a wrong decision there, not protect your capital. You got a stock that was maybe up 200-400%, you've now eaten into half your profits, and it usually happens pretty quickly. However, if you're in a stage three, let's go back to 2018 for a second. A lot of stocks went into stage three at the end of 2018 into 2019. They never actually broke down into stage four. Had you taken some shares off the table, as that stock started to rebound and go back up into another stage two, you could have just reborked the shares. No harm, no foul. Now, maybe it cost you a little bit of money. Maybe there's some tax implications. At the end of the day, you're not sustaining a 60 or 70% loss had you just held on to the stock itself. So as I said, there's no perfect time to know when to sell a stock, but don't make that decision or avoid the wrong time to sell when a stock's already down 50, 60, 70%. Now, if you do get into that situation, and I did last year with Teladoc, I did really well in some other stocks. That's one that I did not do well on. I held it. And maybe because I was too close to it in the real estate world, doing some healthcare facilities and knowing they were building out these telemedicine rooms, I just thought that there was a lot more upside to that particular stock. And maybe I avoid some of the information that was coming in to not sell. I held on for a little bit too long. The stock was down significantly, but I then eventually did cut the shares and it went down even further. So even though a stock's down 50 or 60%, you can still cut that stock at that point, although you've made a mistake already, but don't compound the mistake because the stock could still drop another 50 or 60% from that point. We saw some stocks in the market, such as say Fubo, for example. Stock was down maybe 70 or 80%. People are like, all right, it's near the bottom. It went down another 70 or 80% from that point. So folks that didn't sell lost a significantly more amount of money after the first mistake and then compounded that by making a second mistake by not selling. So that gives you a general idea of just some of the questions we ask and what the emotional pressure is when you sell stock. I always think buying is easy, selling is very difficult, especially when you have profits in a stock after a long stage two run. All right. So we'll jump right into stage three analysis. Well, stage analysis, stage three, the top and face. And I put a chart up here from Roku, and Roku is a stock that I did own. Roku had a tremendous run from pre-COVID. So going back to 2018, 2019, as you can see here in the chart in 2020, stock was running up from sub 100, well up into the 400 plus range, had a great, great run. But then it did something different. And you can see it was fairly consistent in its run up post-COVID in 2020. There wasn't much volatility up and down. Yeah, you had some down weeks, you had some up weeks. For the most part, it was up and to the right. So when you go from stage two to stage three, what are some of the things that you start to see or you should start to notice to say, hey, maybe I should start to consider taking some shares off the table or be prepared to possibly cut this position at some point? When the uptrend ends from stage two, as you start to enter that stage three and you start to pull back towards that 200-day moving average, just start to take notice of the stock itself. If the price volatility starts to increase, and you can see this in February and March of 2021, as you start to pull back to that 200-day moving average, the volatility up and down happened several times between early 2021 to August of 2021, where you're up and down, you didn't have that in 2020. So just visually, you can see the stock is now acting a little bit differently. It doesn't mean it's going to fail at this point, but just take notice. Accumulation starts to tail off with price and volume. So you can see at the volume part of this chart at the bottom, volume has actually substantially decreased as you went to stage three versus what was going on at the early stages of stage two post-COVID. So that's another key telltale sign that you can look at. Earnings estimates and valuations might get too frothy. I'd say there were hundreds of stocks in the market in 2021 where valuations were 50, 60x what their sales revenue was. that's a little too broad. When you see a large subset of stocks, and I'm talking dozens of stocks that are starting to act the same way, going from a stage two to a stage three, and valuations are completely out of control, that's when you have to actually make a determination. Uh-oh, I think we might be at a point where this market's changing and the tune's changing here. Maybe I need to protect some of my dollars that are on the table at this point. When the price drops below the 200-day moving average, that's always a key sign, is to raise that red flag and say, what's going on here? As you can see, from July of 2020 all the way through almost the following July of the next year, really May, June, stock stayed above that 200-day moving average. And even when it pulled back to it, it quickly jumped back above in June and July of 2021. But then in August, that's when it really changed. And that's when the stage three, when you start asking the question, am I going to enter a stage four now? Because it went back below the 200-day. And now you have to determine, is it actually going to be able to recover at this point? So when you're in stage three, it can go below the 200-day. And that's not an exact sign to say sell right now. But you definitely want to be aware, if it can't recover that 200-day, that's when you might want to start taking some shares off the table. A couple other things you want to look at is a large price drop on large volume. If you see that at the end of a run, that's telling you there's a little bit of change in characteristics of the stock itself. Maybe institutions are starting to sell. If new highs are taking place on low volume, so if you look at the new highs in July and August of 2021, the volume is lower than what it was earlier in stage two. So that's another sign that maybe institutions are starting to sell some shares, or doing it on a little bit lower volume. You don't have that strong volume that's breaking out into new high territory at that point, which also relates to the relative strength. The relative strength may be weakening at this point. It might not be going down a lot, but it's kind of maybe just tailed off, or it's flat at this point, just like the 200-day moving average. If the 50-day moving average drops below the 200-day moving average, another sign that short-term, you're headed for some trouble here. And then, as I mentioned, the institutional support slows a little bit. So what I'll leave you with on this slide is just one quote. It's critical to be able to sell position as it starts to decline, perhaps into a stage four, even if the indexes are still making new highs. So one thing I do want to point out, about a third of all stocks in the market will actually go into a stage three and a possible stage four ahead of the market itself. So that's 30%. Another 33-35% will do it at the same time as the market. And then the last third will always do it, will either won't do it, or will do it after the market has done it itself. So, and we did see this in 2021 to 2022, where a lot of these high flying growth stocks went into the stage three and eventually went into a stage four well before the market itself went into those patterns. So it's just something to pay attention to, that the stocks will actually, what I call the market breadth, will actually get there before the market itself. So be very, very aware of that as well.
And Chris, can I jump in with a quick question?
Sure, certainly.
Yeah, so for people who are unaware of stage analysis and the stage three topping phase and stage four as well, could you describe a little bit, you know, where that comes from, and also, you know, maybe, you know, key moving averages to have on their charts to make use of this methodology?
Definitely. So not every stock will follow this. Ultimately, it comes from Stan Weinstein, who we all have the pleasure of actually seeing in this conference that you guys are hosting, which is amazing. I read Stan's book probably about 20 years or so ago. And I have a graphic up at the end of the presentation. I can share what his book is, and you guys can go to that. We can link to it after this. I can throw it out into Twitter as well. Stan Weinstein really kind of set the stage for what the stage analysis was, no pun intended, and described as stocks kind of come out of maybe a bear market in this stage one pattern. So I'm going to go back up for 1 second here. Stocks will kind of come up out of a stage one pattern where they're trading maybe around or below the 200-day moving average. And then they break out on high volume. Maybe earnings are starting to go up. Maybe there's a new product or service that's entering the market. And they blast into what we call an uptrend, or we're going to call it a stage two here. This is where the stock primarily stays above the 200-day moving average. And that's when you stay in an uptrend. These can last anywhere from a few months to a few years, where stock stays in an uptrend. Every once in a while, the stock will cool off. Maybe the market needs to take a breather. The stock needs to take a breather. Then they'll fall into what I call a flat pattern, or a stage three pattern. The stock may or may not stay above the 200-day, but it stays pretty close to it. And in some instances, it will then start to generate a new stage two and go a little bit higher. But if the market's starting to turn, and you're seeing a lot of stocks in the market, which is what we saw in 21 and 22, start to fail below that 200-day moving average, now they drop from a stage three into a stage four. So basically, it's just a cycle that stocks follow over and over again. Now, granted, not every stock is going to follow this, and this stage analysis is not going to predict what's going to happen in the future. It's really a tool that you use in real time to maybe narrow down your odds of what may or may not happen. Technical analysis will never tell you what's going to happen in the future, but it can help guide you based on past action and new action. So the key, really, I always say to everyone is, if the stock starts to act differently from what it's been doing over the last 8, 10, 12 months, that's when you want to take notice, and maybe something's going to change there. So if one stock and dozens of others in the same industry and other industries are starting to kind of fail below that 200-day, that's when you want to take notice. And this is what we saw in the fall of 2021. A lot of the key growth stocks, earnings estimates were getting missed. stocks were dropping below the 200-day moving average, and then a lot of stocks were actually dropping pretty significantly on large volume. So these are the things that we want to look for. Again, it's not a predictor, but it's a tool that we use to help with the odds. All right, so we talked a little bit about stage three. The next stage that we jump into is stage four. So I use a chart here called Pinterest, another stock that I did own back in 2020 into 2021. And I will say with Roku and Pinterest, both stocks I sold while they were in stage three, portions of shares. I didn't sell the whole position. Some stocks I held for a little bit too long as they went into stage four. Other stocks I cut pretty quickly. And that goes back to the emotional, mental type piece where nobody's really perfect to sell every stock. Sometimes you just like a company, you like the products, you use the products, and you don't want to let go of that stock for whatever reason. So although I did sell certain shares at certain points, maybe I didn't sell the whole position. And in hindsight, you can look back and say, well, maybe that was a mistake. But again, in real time, it's a lot more difficult than looking back at a chart like this where it's so clean cut, where I can give you a stage two, three, and four. When it's happening in real time, it doesn't look this simple. So from a stage three to stage four, and this is the key part, this is where you really want to start to sell your positions. Either you're going to take a portion off the table or you're going to sell your entire position, is when the price starts to make lower lows. So here with Pinterest, as you go from stage three into stage four, number one, back in, let's say, May or June of 2021, it started to go below the 200-day moving average, but that line was still kind of pointing up, and the stock made a comeback there and actually got back above the 200-day. But then as you got into July and almost August of 21, it dropped back below that 200-day moving average, and now it did it on big volume with a big price drop. And that's why that first circle that you see at the beginning of stage four, that was the first major red flag to say, hey, maybe I should take some shares off the table here. Now, if you didn't take shares off the table there, you actually can go still another few months, and then it makes one more attempt to go back up above or near that 200-day moving average from below where it's sitting, and it failed. That was the second point where you should say, maybe I should cut the entire position at this point, and we are now fully into a stage four decline or downtrend. So a couple things that we look for is price from length remains below the 200-day moving average. You don't really want to own stocks that are below the 200-day moving average, especially when they're declining from a prior uptrend. 50-day moving average drops below 200-day and probably stays below the 200-day moving average. So you want to take a look at that. Price drops on large volume. These are called distribution days. So what I mean by this is if a stock drops on a daily basis or a weekly basis and the volume is larger than the day before or the week before, that's technically called distribution. A lot of times the volume will be greater than the average over the last 60 days. So when stocks are falling on big drop days with large volume, those are typically institutions that are getting out of the stock. Folks like me, folks like you, Richard, we're not going to move the stock. We don't own enough shares to move stocks. But when you have institutions coming in and they're trading tens of thousands of shares, they're going to move the stock. And remember, an institution, when they're accumulating into a stock, they do it slowly over months. When they want to get out, they open the door and they jump out. And that's when you see this first circle and the second circle. Those are institutions getting out of this stock. Ultimately, this stock went on to drop 70 or 80% over the next several months or so as it entered that stage four, because institutions definitely were heading out the door very quickly. Earnings start to slow and they start to miss estimates. That's another key thing. So on the fundamental side, when you see the earnings slowing and the estimates are being missed, you want to kind of just keep that in the back of your mind as you're looking technically to see if the stock is starting to really slow down at this point. The overall market, as I mentioned on the previous slide, may have also entered decline as well. So if the overall market is now in a stage three or stage four, it's probably even more likely at this point you want to get out of your stocks and move to cash at this point and protect the gains that you've made previously. The relative strength line is definitely going to be weakening once you're in a stage four. So as the RS, as we like to term it, starts to drop, another sign to say, hey, maybe we should start to get out of this market. When you're well into a stage four, the market sentiment starts to become bearish. Now, market sentiment usually trails what's going on in the market itself. We're seeing that now in 2023. We still have a lot of bears out there, but we're clearly in an uptrend in the market now. So sentiment's still bearish, even though we're bullish. Well, back in 21 and 22, a lot of bulls were still bullish because of what happened from 2018 to 2019 to post-COVID in 2020. They didn't want to turn bearish. But as you go into stage four, the sentiment will become bearish. You probably don't want to be in these high-flying stocks. Rallies are always going to stall. They're going to fail to recover the moving averages. And then you'll start to see finally in the institutional numbers, they're no longer buying the stock. And you might even see a drop in institutions that actually own the position itself. Just more clear signs to say, hey, let's stay away from stocks right now. Let's move to cash and wait for the next uptrend that's going to happen in the future. And these cycles, whether you go from a stage one to two to three to four, they happen repeatedly over and over again. Not every stock's going to follow it. Some stocks will have V-shaped recoveries. Some stocks might skip a stage one and go right into a stage two from a stage four. It does happen, but generally you will find dozens, if not hundreds of stocks that will follow these types of patterns. So just take note of it across all industries. The quote I give here from Mammoth again is the market will do whatever it must prove the greatest number of investors wrong. And that's just generally a rule in the market. Whatever we think is going to happen, usually the market does the opposite. And yes, there are two sides of every trade. So somebody's usually thinking correctly while someone's wrong, but the market's here to fool us. And unfortunately, we have some tools that we can use to help us not be fooled much. We are going to lose money in the market. The key is to lose less than you win, or win more than you lose. And you'll do right, all right over time. A little extra bonus, I'll do this. This is not really stage analysis, but I like to look at the percent above the 200-day moving average. So what do I mean by this? This is not for indexes. This is more for stock specific. And I give two examples here. So when a stock starts to trade about 70 to maybe 100% above its own 200-day moving average, you want to take note that the stock is extended. Now, just because a stock is extended does not mean it's going to fail and go into a stage four decline. Let's take a look at Cloudflare up here on the top chart. You go back to the end of 2020 to early 21, I have a couple hours here. Stock was about 85% above the 200-day moving average. Now, over the next 4 months, it pulled back and met back up with that 200-day moving average. However, it held the 200-day. That's a positive sign. That's a stock that was in a stage two that you could have maybe argued went into a stage three there from late 2020 into about maybe June of 2021. But then it regained the stage two pattern, went back up again, and went on to double and make new all-time highs by the end of 2021. Now, once again, the stock was extended at the end of 2021, and it was 89% above its 200-day moving average. I actually put a tweet here at the bottom left of this slide where I said when stocks get about 70% above, 70% or greater above the 200-day moving average, it might be time to sell or take some money off the table, take some profits. Now, I used Net and Asana and Upstart and a few other stocks that were at those positions at that time in November of 2021. Well, it was no coincidence that these stocks all dropped 70, 80% over the next 12 months. They're a little bit extended. They did pull back to their 200-day moving average, and they all went into a stage four decline as we went more in. We went into a bear market in 2022. So the key I just want to focus on is just because a stock is extended from that 200-day moving average doesn't mean it's going to fail. However, if it does come back and then actually drops below that 200-day like it did in late 21 into early 2022, and then it failed to recover that line up until about April of 2022, that's a sign to get out of the position. It's to sell a stock. Now, with Net, I was a little bit luckier with Net than I was with a TDOC or some other positions I had. I sold all of it back in 2021. I just got out of the stock. I just thought it was too extended. I thought that earnings and sales numbers were coming back. They were too frothy at the time. So I got out of this position completely. This is one I played really well. Other stocks I didn't do quite as well. And you can see Net did drop 80% from its peak by the middle of 2022. So you wanted to get out up near that, say $100 to $150, $180 share. Per share location when that stock was starting to fail below the 200-day moving average. Now let's look at one that's in real time, NVIDIA. NVIDIA is a really hot stock that everyone's talking about right now. It's been a great stock over the last 20 years. It's been a tremendous stock since about 2015 or so. It dropped last year, had a big drop. It went from about $350 a share all the way down to about $108 a share. And in October, it bottomed. And here we are in 2023. It broke out back above that 200-day moving average. And then it just blasted from about $150 a share up to $400 a share. As of Friday's close, the stock is now 96% above its 200-day moving average. Does that mean you should automatically sell right now today? No, it doesn't. If I was in this position right now, would I take some shares off the table? I would. Now, with that said, I do want to say this stock could actually go to $500 a share before it decides it wants to pull back that 200-day moving average. It will pull back to the 200-day moving average. When? I have no idea. It could happen next month. It could happen in 6 months. Maybe it doesn't happen until next year at some point. But this stock will pull back to that 200-day moving average. So if you're a long-term holder, maybe just hold your shares, and when it pulls back, you add to your position. If you're someone that's not in the stock right now, maybe just wait until it pulls back to that 200-day, and that's when you start to establish a new position. Or maybe you're someone that's trading a little bit shorter term, maybe take some shares off the table now, lock in some profits, and then rebuy those shares when it does eventually come back to that 200-day moving average. But I'd say it's a big red flag right now at 96% above the 200-day moving average. It is extended, and it will come back. However, stocks can stay irrational a lot longer than we think, and this thing may have some more room to move higher. Maybe it has another climax top where it blasts off another $100. Now, if it does that at that point, it will probably be about 150, 160% above the 200-day. I definitely would cut my position at that point and then wait until it pulled back and normalized a little bit more. So just something to kind of keep your eye on and something just to look at real time, not something that we're looking at a chart in hindsight. But here's a real live case study of a stock that is extremely extended, and I think we're all going to see in real time what it does and what happens.
Chris, can I jump in with a question here? Sure. Does it make a difference to you kind of where in the market cycle this occurs? For instance, NVIDIA here, we're coming off bear market lows, while Net, it was during a strong bull market, and the second time it did it, we were, you know, well into a bull market at that point and getting on the last leg. So I wanted to ask whether that kind of makes a difference for you.
It does make a difference, because as we say that M and canceling, what is the market direction? Typically 75% of stocks will follow the market itself. NVIDIA being a strong stock itself, it's a $1 trillion type company. AI is the big buzzword these days, but NVIDIA does have some really solid technologies that kind of focus in on the artificial intelligence that we're kind of going into versus the internet we had 20 years ago. Yes, if you're in a stage two with the market itself and the stock is extended, it will most likely pull back, but chances are it's going to do what NET did back in late 20 to 21. It will hit that 200-day or come close to the 200-day moving average and then bounce back up again. So it probably won't fail into a stage four. But that's one of the key things. You can look on a short-term frame, you can look at the 50-day moving average. Maybe when it pulls back to the 50-day, maybe that's where you want to get into the stock or add to your position at that point. In any event, whether the market's going up, the market's going down, in this case, it's going up, NVIDIA will pull back. It is extended. It doesn't matter what anyone says. Historically, you look at it, the stock extended. However, I think it will act well when it does pull back, and it should hold support. Now, if it doesn't hold support and does what NET did back in late 21 and 22, that's when red flags will start to get raised, and then you'll have to make that other decision. Hey, should I sell more of the position? Should I cut the position entirely at that point? But those decisions won't be made for probably many months, if not a year, because it's going to take some time for the stock to pull back now. But yes, the market definitely determines how severe maybe the correction is going to be once it pulls back towards that 200-day. All right, so now we're going to get into more of a macro indicator. So market breadth itself. And what is market breadth? Market breadth is really just the makeup of the stocks of the market itself. So you can look at the NASDAQ, you can look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average. They're basically just made up of a bunch of stocks that comprise the stocks that are in the market itself. What those stocks are doing is more important than what the indexes are doing. A lot of the indexes are heavily weighted towards certain stocks these days. You take the S&P 500, I mean, it's really weighted to about 10 stocks. It's 10 stocks versus 490 stocks at this point. I don't look at the S&P 500 and say it's very useful. I want to look at the breadth of the overall stock market. What are all the stocks in the market doing collectively? So I want to look at all 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 stocks in the market. Are they making new highs collectively? Are they making new lows collectively? So what we really want to do, and this indicator really looks at change in trends. When you start to see what we call average readings turn to extreme readings, you're probably looking at a change of trend. So either you're hitting the top of a market or you're coming to the bottom of the market. So if we go back into 2021, the chart on the right-hand side was a chart that I used in a tweet back in July of 2021. And I pointed out, I said, hey, the NASDAQ's now making new highs while the number of stocks making new highs is decreasing. And you can see from the two dotted red lines, yeah, NASDAQ kept going up, but the number of new highs kept going down. That's a red flag. That's a divergence. So what that's saying is the index is going up, but the index is weighted. However, the overall market is starting to weaken at this point. And we all know what happened after the summer of 2021. The market started to break down and fall apart at the end of 21. And in 2022, we had more of a bear type market. So the divergence that we started to see in the new high, new low ratio was a macro indicator that gave you some foreshadowing of what was to come. Underneath the hood, the market wasn't acting so well, even though the NASDAQ was going on to make new highs. So these are some of the things we look at. Are new lows starting to accumulate versus new highs? How do they match up versus what the characteristics were of this indicator in the past? Is there a divergence? In this case, there was a divergence. I have a chart on the left-hand side of this page where it shows the overall market new highs and new lows. And when we're in the gray zone, that's positive. We're above zero, which means the net new high, new low ratio is above one or above zero. And then if it goes negative, it means below zero. It means we have more new lows and we have new highs. You can see from this chart, it's a very good graphic. At the end of 21, as we went from November to December, it went negative. And someone might say, well, Chris, look, you have a bunch of little pink-like drops all throughout 2020 and 2021. Yes, that's true. So what I try to do is I normalize this chart with a 50-day moving average. The blue 50-day moving average didn't go negative until the end of 21 as the overall ratio went negative. This is when you should say, uh-oh, I think this market might be heading for trouble. And as we saw in 2022, that 50-day moving average stayed negative for the entire year and didn't start to go back to positive until 2023. And even here in 2023, it's struggling to stay positive, which might make you think like, well, what's really going on? I think one answer to that is so many stocks got beaten down so badly in 2022, it's taken them some time to get back to their new highs. When you have stocks that drop 70, 80, 90%, it's going to take them a couple of years to get back to those new highs. So although this indicator is showing that it's still on the weak side, the market isn't an uptrend at this point. I think it's just we need some of those stocks to catch up to what those new highs were in the past before this chart will actually turn positive again. But when you're on the positive side in 21 and we went negative in 2022, I think this indicator nailed it. It nailed it with the new lows and it nailed it with the 50-day moving average actually going negative at this point. So had you not sold out of your shares or had you not taken some money off the table by the end of 21, once we went into 2022 and new lows really started to stack up and this 50-day average really started to drop, those were some of your last signs to say, I really need to get out at this point. I need to protect my capital, move the cash, and let's just wait for a better day at this point. great indicator, but it's a macro indicator. We look at this on a monthly basis. This is not something you can really use on a daily basis, but it's a great one to show you a change in trend from that larger macro standpoint, if you will. The next one I use for market breadth is the percentage of stocks above the 200-day moving average. So this is a collection of all stocks in the market. So if I'm looking at the NASDAQ, and that's what I have on this slide today, is the NASDAQ. All the stocks lifting the NASDAQ. This chart shows you the line that's navigating here, shows you the percentage of all stocks on the NASDAQ that are trading above their own individual 200-day moving average. When this starts to drop below about 25%, that's when you start to get a little nervous that, hey, are we starting to enter what we call the market correction zone? And this is what happened at the end of 21 going into 2022. We had a market that actually also had a divergence as well. The NASDAQ, which is the grayed out line or area graph behind the line, that was still going up, say, in April, May, June of 21. But the breadth itself, the number of stocks that now are dropping below the 200-day moving average, was really accelerating downward all throughout 2021, to where by the end of the year, it got to about 25%. And then by the time we got into the middle of 2022, we were dropping down to single-digit numbers at that point, which usually starts to mark the bottom of the actual bear market at that point. I give some historical basis here of 2002, 2008, 2018, 2020, and 2022, just to show when markets start to fail, the breadth itself, the number of stocks that are below the 200-day moving average, will start to drop as well. So I like to couple this with the new high, new low ratio. If both of these indicators are starting to actually decline, most likely we're going to start to head into a downtrend in market, a market that's going to go into a stage four, or just generally want to term a bear market. That's what's going to happen. And that's exactly what we saw in 2021 into 2022. We had all the signs in the summer of 2021 that the breadth below the hood of the market was really starting to fail from a new high, new low ratio, and just stocks trading above their 200-day moving average. As you can see the chart all the way at the bottom right here, 2022, the NASDAQ was still going up, but this indicator just kept going down. This was the same case with new highs and new lows. So when this indicator aligns with the new highs and new lows, and it's starting to diverge from the market, you know something big's coming up, where it's going to be a change in trend, and maybe start to take some dollars off the table. I mentioned a little bit earlier, the quote at the bottom, data shows that more than a third of all stocks hit their top prior to the market top. A second, third make a top at the same time. And then the last third either don't top out or will eventually top out after the market does it as well. So these indicators will get you ahead of the market, as you can see. NASDAQ was still making highs at late 2021, but these indicators were starting to make new lows, multi-year lows at that point. So it gave you that advance warrant to say, hey, take some dollars off the table, lock in some profits, and start to sell some positions because the market's headed for some trouble. The last thing I say here up top is, where are we in the market cycle? And you just asked this question, Richard. Market cycle also makes a difference. Now, NASDAQ was making new highs all throughout 2021 as these indicators were making new lows. But they have to, when you have a divergence like that, either the market has to come back down to the indicator or the indicator has to come back up to the market. In this particular case, the market came down to the indicators. So the market cycle was a down cycle at that point. So as we entered 2022, it was clear to everyone out there that we were heading into a bear market in 2022.
And could you touch on the orange and red lines on your charts and what those signify and how you use that in your process?
Sure. So basically, I've read this in some of the books. When to Sell by Justin Mamas is one that kind of gets into this a little bit. When the percentage of stocks that are below the 200-day moving average gets below 25%, meaning 25% of them are above the 200-day and 75% are now below the 200-day, their own individual 200-day moving average, that's most likely a market that's going into correction. Doesn't mean we're in a bear market, but maybe it's a market that's going into a stage three pattern and it's trying to figure out what it wants to do. When that drops below 10% or even 15%, I use most often, that means we're actually now going into what I call a bear market. And when we get down into those ranges, I actually start to say that's when you want to start accumulating stocks. Stocks that are actually coming down out of that stage four decline, maybe starting to build a stage one pattern, you can start to accumulate stocks at that point. And then if in 2023 here, we start to break out into stage two, you definitely want to start accumulating stocks at this point. So I kind of just use those as guidelines. It's not foolproof at this point. You can see in the past, anytime it drops below 25%, 2016, late 2018, COVID in 2020, and then here in 21, 22, those are the areas where the market did pull back. And this indicator kind of gave you the heads up. Yes, the market is pulling back. So maybe lock in some profits, take some dollars off the table, protect your profits at this point. All right, so market cycle, direction of the market. So perfect, you kind of teed this up for me as well, not knowing that this was coming up in the presentation, but we want to know where the market stands. So I'm looking at the NASDAQ again here, specifically for today. And what are some technical sell signals? Do we have a climax top? And what does a climax top mean? Climax top means after a long uptrend and run or a long stage two run, maybe you have a few weeks where the stock goes parabolic. And I'm sorry, the market goes parabolic. Yes, stock can do the same thing as well. So if the market goes parabolic, it might be a signal that it's topping out at this point. It's getting exhausted. Sometimes it is an exhaustion gap. And I say that you have a lot of exhaustion gaps following a stage two. This is a little bit of a signal that, hey, you know what? Maybe just the characteristic of the market is starting to change at this point in time. And maybe you want to start considering watching some stocks. If they start acting irrationally, you take some, you lock in some profits, take some shares off the table. With the market itself, we're looking for distribution days. So in the fall of 2021, I heavily covered a lot of distribution days that were happening in the NASDAQ market, meaning down days in the market on above average volume. And when you start to have 4, 5, 6, 7 in the fall of 2021, we had about 8 or 9 of them. Basically, those are institutions selling their shares. We know we're heading into a down decline type market. You want to start to get out of your positions at that point. The chart that I have on the top right shows a 19% drop in the market from top to that point in, say, early 2022. I compared that to a chart in a tweet in back in 2008 to 2009. We also had a 19% drop, and then the market tried to come back up to 200-day, the underside of the 200-day, and failed. It did that twice back in 2008, and then the bottom fell out. Well, here in 2022, we came down, we came back up to the 200-day back in about March or April 2022, and then if you go to the chart on the bottom left, that's that first red arrow, the bottom fell out, then we went into a bear market. And you can see it happened two more times in 2022, where we had some nice rallies, market came back up, but then hit the underside of that 200-day moving average and then failed again. And it wasn't until here in 2023, the blue arrow, where we finally actually jumped back above the 200-day, and we've now recovered it and since not dropped back below, so we're now in a new uptrend at this point. Now, all these charts come from tweets that I've made in the market back in the past. So back in January 2023, I asked the question at the bottom of that chart, will the NASDAQ make a lower low? It never made a lower low from October into early 2023, and then it eventually recovered that 200-day moving average. That was a sign that we've now had a characteristic. We changed the trend of the market again. The market trend has now changed to the upside. And that kind of gave you the green flag. Hey, you can now start buying shares in some of the leading stocks. And that's exactly what happened at this point. So always look at the direction of the market. You can look at the direction from a cyclical standpoint and look at the stage analysis and understand, are we having weak rallies after a recent drop? Are we having large daily price run-ups? Are we failing to recover a 200-day? Are we actually blasting above the 200-day on strong volume? All these little signals will kind of give you telltale signs of whether we're in a decline or we're starting to go into a new uptrend. Direction of the market and market cycle is very, very important when you're also looking at your individual stocks as well. And then I'll say last but not least is fundamentals. And most of this presentation has been technical, but fundamentals are just as important. I just also want to clarify, I do follow CanSlim. When I set up screens for stocks that I'm looking to trade, I build all my screens based off of fundamentals first. So I'm screening a universe of 7,000 stocks. I'll usually narrow that down to 50 to 100 stocks based off of key fundamental characteristics. I don't talk about the fundamentals as much on Twitter as I probably did on my website back in the past, but earnings per share and sales revenue are probably my two key indicators. I do get into other things like net income, return on equity, EBITDA, cash flow, valuations, of course. And then I also want to look at products and services. Do we have products or services that are new to the market? Are they saturated in the market? Do we have new products or services come to the market? Are we still working with old products and services, depending on what company it is? All the things that we look for stock we want to buy on the upside are the same things we're going to look for on the downside as well. So I put a couple examples on this slide from Roku. I looked at the quarterly EPS and the quarterly sales. If you start in June of 2021, you could see the EPS was positive at 52 cents. Sales were 81% greater than the same quarter of the previous year. But then as you start to go from June to September, December, you can see the EPS went from positive to negative, and the sales growth actually declined significantly, went from 81% to 51, to 33, to 28, all the way down to 12, and then zero. Well, it wouldn't be any surprise, as all that was taking place, the stock itself was going from a stage three to a stage four in late 2021, and ultimately the stock went from $490 a share to $40 a share. That was a 90% decline in Roku stock. All the signs were there, both fundamentally and technically. Earnings were slowing. Earnings went from positive to negative. That's a major red flag. Guidance and forecast looking forward were reduced. That's another major red flag. And then sales. Although sales kept continuing to increase over time, the growth decreased significantly. So as you see the earnings per share dropping, as you see the sales slowing, and the stock starts breaking down from stage three to stage four, you basically have every setup you need to tell you it's time to get out of the stock. Sell it and sell it now. And if you like it, someday in the future, you can come back to it. If I'm not mistaken, Roku right now here in June of 2023, I think it's just starting, it's building that stage one base. And it looks like it might be poised to start to break out into a stage two base. But here we are a whole year and a half, almost 2 years later, from the initial decline. It took it 2 years to get to this point. I'm going from a stage three near a top, now coming down to a stage one, looking to break out for a new run here. And Roku may break out. I'm not advising anyone to go out there and buy Roku, but if you just look at the stage analysis, it's about to break out into a stage two at this point. Doesn't mean it will, maybe it fails. But these things take time to kind of just evolve and kind of generate going from one stage to the other stage. Ultimately, I just want to say with the fundamentals, earnings and sales, those are the two main things I look at. When earnings and sales are growing Q over Q and year over year, that's a stock you probably want to get into and own as long as it's in the right technical position. When those things start to slow, that's a sign, hey, start to get out of stock. The technicals will usually lead the fundamentals. Fundamentals usually lag the technicals. So that's why I say you want to couple these things together. You want to use them together. They're two tools you want to use together. A lot of times I see debates online. Well, I'm a fundamental and I'm a technical analyst. Well, why can't you just use both? What's preventing somebody from using both tools? And that's what I like to use both tools. And that's all they are. They're just tools. They're not going to give you the answers. I mean, how many stocks are out there that have great fundamentals, but the stock doesn't go anywhere for many years? And then how many stocks are out there that have terrible fundamentals, but then it goes 10x on a technical basis? Happens all the time. So you just have to use these as tools. And then the last thing I mentioned, and I kind of mentioned this a little bit earlier, is profitability. You probably want to stick to the stocks that are profitable. Now, I know a lot of young IPO new stocks in the market aren't quite profitable yet, and they can have some really significant runs going from a stage one to a stage two. But ultimately, what we saw in the last couple of years is the stocks that were profitable were the stocks that dropped the least and have now been the first stocks to start going back up here in 2023. It's not to say avoid stocks that aren't profitable. Let's just say you're going to have less heartache in your portfolio if you stick to the stocks that are profitable. You want positive earnings and you want a lot of sales growth in stocks. And then if the technical chart makes sense, get in the stock and you won't have any trouble. The minute that your fundamentals start to break down, the minute your technicals start to break down, that's when it's probably time to sell. And that's really the basis of this entire presentation is these are just some of the key tools that you want to use, from large macro indicators to individual indicators to overall market general sentiment cycle indicators. Is these are some ideas of when to sell the stock and protect some of your capital. I'll reiterate what I said in one of the first slides. There is no perfect time to sell, and no one's going to have a sell right at the top unless they get really lucky, and no one's going to have a buy really right at the bottom. But if you can get a large portion of an uptrend and avoid a large portion of a downtrend, you're going to do pretty well over time. As William O'Neill said, who, rest in peace, he passed away last week, great individual, offered a lot with his money, how to make money in stocks, his newspaper. The whole secret to winning big in the stock market is not to be right all the time, but to lose the least amount possible when you're wrong. And that's the basis of this entire presentation, is learn when to sell to protect some of your profitability. You don't want to have a stock that goes up 400% and then you sit in it and it drops 90% and you're right back where you started. You just wasted probably several years worth of gains and you ended up back at ground zero again and you didn't make any money. You would have been better off just putting your money into a CD at that point. So with that said, I think we can kind of wrap this up. And then if we have any questions, Richard, if you want to jump in, if there's any questions from the audience at this point, just recapping some of the major points. The three books, you have Stan Weinstein's Secret for Profiting in Bull and Bear Markets, an absolute must read in my opinion, especially if you want to understand stage analysis. Stan's going to be having a presentation. I'm sure Richard, I forget exactly what time he's presenting. I think it's next weekend. But I highly recommend listening to his presentation. I highly recommend reading his book. The book was written back in the late 80s. It's just as relevant today as it was back in the late 80s. So that's one I'd say read. The next one is When to Sell by Justin Mamas. It's a little lesser known book that's out there at this point. It gets more into the psychological aspects and the emotional aspects of when you want to sell a stock. And this particular book is based exclusively on when to sell. I think he does a great job kind of taking you through the mental process of looking for some of the key indicators when to sell. He does get into a lot of the macro indicators. He's not a big technical guy. He did graph charts himself personally on paper versus computer, but he gets into a lot of the new low ratio type stuff, advanced decline lines, things along those lines. And I just mentioned William O'Neill, How to Make Money in Stocks. I think this is a great book just to read for all aspects of the market. Stocks you're looking to buy, his whole CANSLIM type acronym, and then when to sell on the flip side as well. So just to recap, learn and understand stage analysis. This is what I would recommend to a lot of folks. If you want to learn how to sell, when to sell, learn the stage analysis. So stage three, stage four, and then stocks that start to get a little extended when they're maybe 70, 80% above the 200-day moving average. Follow market breadth. Again, this is a macro type indicator. But when you have big changes in market trend, the new highs and new lows, and the percentage of stocks above the 200-day move average, they're going to start to tell you when the market's changing its characteristics. Understand the different market cycles. Where is the market? What is the M and CANSLIM? Is the market up? Is the market down? Is the market trading sideways? This will also help kind of guide you when you're making your own decisions with your individual stocks. And then know the fundamentals. You must know the fundamentals of your stock. Is the stock profitable? Why is it profitable? Where is it profitable? What do the earnings look like? What do the sales look like? These are some of the key things you want to know, and couple that with the technical tools that you have in your arsenal. And at the end of the day, you're going to do really well. And I've said this in the presentation I did a couple years ago. If you work full time and you're not trading full time, I don't trade full time. I have a job. I have a family. I have kids. They play sports. I'm very busy all week. You only need a half hour per night or even just a few hours on the weekend. That's all you really need to consistently kind of protect your wealth and then grow your wealth to use these techniques and be successful in the market. So with that said, I'll say thank you.
Chris, this is really fantastic. I think this is exactly what I was looking for, and I think it helped out a lot of people, especially people with longer time frames. So thank you so much. I definitely got some questions for you. And please, anybody in the chat, if you have questions, this is the perfect time to drop them in the chat. I see a few coming in here, so we'll get to those in just a second. But first, Chris, I wanted to ask you if you could touch on selling right after you establish a position. So you mentioned accumulating stocks during stage one and also on stage two breakouts. In that case, when you're just starting a position, it's pretty new. What are some of your rules and guidelines for cutting a position to make sure, you know, you're protecting capital at that stage of the game as well?
Sure. So the way I would attack that question is I'd say in the last 10 years, I've changed versus when I was younger. I used to just jump into stocks 100% full-fledged early in my career. Had a lot less money back then. But I usually buy in position tranches, if you will. So I usually establish a position at 25% or maybe a third of what I want to ultimately own. If the stock acts right, and then sometimes it breaks out really quickly, then pulls back a little bit, then I'll add to the stock again, and then maybe another time in the future. So I'll usually buy a third, and a third. If it's a stock that just acts really, really well and blasts off after the first maybe 4 or 8 weeks, maybe I'll buy that first third initially, and then I'll buy the rest of the stock when I get that first chance, because a lot of times they'll just run away, and then you won't be able to get back into the stock, and it just your cost basis will get too high at that point. If you buy a stock and it just doesn't act right from the beginning, you probably should just cut it immediately, and then just reanalyze it. I did that recently with Credo. I owned the stock, acted really well, actually was off about 60 or 70%, and then it had a really bad earnings and just got cut really badly. I got out of the stock. It was just like, I'm going to sell it 100% at that point, just get out of it. It since has rebounded since I sold it. I think it went all the way down to like $8 shares, around 16 now. So it's actually doubled up from its low. I initially established that position around 13. I don't own it, but now that it's back up to 16, just because it went from 8 to 16, doesn't prevent me from getting back into that stock going forward if I think it's going to be successful. Maybe that was a hiccup that happened a couple months ago. I'm not quite sure. But if a stock doesn't act correctly from the point you buy it, I say just sell it immediately, especially if you're a short-term trader. If you're a long-term trader, you probably just want to accumulate over time. Act like an institution. Accumulate shares over time, over months, if not years, and just kind of build those positions. I have a long-term portfolio. We own stocks like Apple and Google and Amazon. And anytime those stocks come back down, I add to those positions. Years later, I'll just continue to add to those positions. So that's just some of my advice as far as how I attack some scenarios like that.
Yeah, I think that's super helpful. And would you be able to just touch on, you know, maybe your time frame a little bit and how that's kind of changed? Because I think, you know, even more active traders can really make use of this presentation, because just focus on a shorter aspect of this. Focus on stage two uptrends for buying breakouts, mm-hmm. buying base breakouts. You know, probably don't be active or be short during stage four. But could you touch on your time frame and kind of how you approach things? That might add some nice perspective.
Sure. So I do have a short-term portfolio and I have a long-term portfolio. Long-term is for years. I mean, I want to own those stocks for many years. I mean, some of those stocks I want to own for decades, and a couple of them are coming up into a decade now. And those are the big bang type stocks. More specific to the short-term portfolio, I mean, I'm looking to own those stocks maybe from a few months to a year or so. And I'm looking for that big run. So if you have a young IPO or stock that's been around the market for a few years, but now is breaking into that stage two, Those patterns usually last for 8 to 10 months, maybe 12 to 18 months. I'd like to own those stocks for most of that run. That's what I'm looking for. But if I get into a position and I just read it wrong and technically it looked great, fundamentally it sounded great, but then an earnings comes out and everything falls apart, just get out of it. Just sell it. And there's so many other opportunities in the market you can go into. Or maybe, like I said, maybe stock has a hiccup and you just have to wait a few more months. You're a little bit early at this point. So my time frame for short term is anywhere from, I mean, if it's stock not going well, it could be days or week, but usually a few months to maybe a year or so is when I'm looking to hold that stock and then get out of it at that point. Yeah. Now, when you look at the stage analysis, I'm not a short-term day trader, so I don't trade from days to weeks. But I understand that you can use these patterns on shorter-term charts as well. They do set up there. I'm not very experienced in that, but it's something that some folks could look into there. I'm looking mostly at weekly charts when I'm doing a stage two to a stage three to a stage four. I understand that you can do intraday or daily charts and it works just as well there. But I can't really give advice for the day traders because I've never done that throughout my career.
Yeah, we'll have Brian Shannon on later today, and I think he's a pro who we both know at using stage analysis on multiple time frames. So yeah, perfect.
Correct.
Yep. There was a comment in the chat and a question about the time frame of chart you use, weekly versus daily. What are your kind of thoughts there, and how should you pick that to align with your time frame? I think is a good question, a good general question for everybody.
Sure. So I primarily use weekly charts when it comes to stage analysis. I think the daily charts are just too volatile and they're a little noisy, and you can't really depict what stage you're in or what's going on. If I focus on a weekly chart first, just say generally, what is the high level chart pattern look like? I mean, are we going from a stage 3 to a 4? Are we going from a stage 1 to a stage 2? And then if I start to determine, okay, I think this might be breaking out or breaking down, then I'll actually zero in on the daily charts and look to see where the stock's acting from a 50-day moving average versus a 200-day moving average. So primarily, I always start with weekly charts. That's where I start first. But then when I want to pinpoint where I'm going to buy or where I'm going to sell, then I will go to the daily chart. And I only use daily and weekly charts. When it comes to moving averages, I only use the 50-day and the 200-day for the most part. Stan Weinstein, in his book, when he wrote that book back in the 80s, he used what was called the 30-week moving average. But later in his career, maybe this is a question you can ask him next week. I've heard in some interviews he's done over the last couple of years, he's now changed that to more of a 200-day moving average or 40-week moving average. So I'd be very curious. That'd be one of my questions to Stan is, why did you change? Or if you didn't change, but why have you integrated maybe the 40-week and /200-day versus that 30-week? And what were the changes and why did you do that later in your career versus early in your career? But I stay more weekly and high level just to kind of get a general view of what the more the macro approach is. But that aligns with my time frame. I'm looking from months to maybe a year or two. So I need to look at a weekly chart for that.
Yeah, perfect. And actually, in the masterclass we did with him last year, he kind of answered that question. He actually has kind of added that. So he uses the 150-day, 200-day, and he mentioned he puts a lot more weight on the 50-day, actually. So things kind of have sped up for him a little bit, which is kind of interesting. And he uses the equivalent moving averages on the weekly chart as well. So he looks at both the 30-week, 40-week, and the 10-week would be the equivalent of the 50-day. There's a really good question from Ricardo Martinez. If fundamentals and technicals are strong, where does valuation come into play? Thinking of many SaaS stocks now that have surged this past month.
Yes. So I go back to the point, take NVIDIA. We were looking at that chart where it's a little extended right now, and the valuation of NVIDIA is pretty high at this point. It's profitable. It's got strong EPS, got strong sales. It's a leader in the market. It has an established history of being very successful. Typically, what you want to do is when that pulls back to a 50-day or 200-day, that's where you want to grab your position or add to your position. That's what I would say to answer that question the best I can is valuations. I mean, when you're in a market that's about to turn over from a stage 3 to stage 4, as we saw in 21 to 22, valuations are important at that point.
Right.
You go back to 2018, 2019, 2020, valuation didn't matter. Not to the market. I mean, we had stocks that were valued at 60, 70, 80 times sales, but they were still going up and making higher highs. So usually when you're going into a bull market or an uptrend, the valuations aren't quite as important from a technical standpoint. They will be important at some point in the future. That could be many years out. So 21 and 22, valuations were important. 23, I'm not quite sure if they're important. Now, if you have two like stocks and they're both acting well, they're both profitable, and one is a little bit more reasonably valued, I'd probably go after that position, especially if they're both leaders in the market. But it's one of those things when the general market's going up, sometimes people just ignore the valuations, but at some point they will become important again. I don't like stocks that are overvalued. It's just in the back of your mind, it kind of seeps in there. Like at some point it has to come back to reality and it can't be valued at what it's at. It can't be trading that 50 times future revenue, if you will. So it does make me a little bit nervous. I'd love to take a stock like NVIDIA and watch it drop back down towards the 200-day. The valuation will correct along with that. And that's probably a much better risk to reward ratio type situation to add shares to that position.
Yeah. And how do you take into account that the valuation, it might seem stretched right now, but it's taken into account, you know, a game changing catalyst like, you know, AI could be.
AI.
And, you know, that might lead to a tremendous amount of growth. That's a tough question, right? Balance,
sure,
valuation. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
It is, but we've seen that. We saw that with the internet stocks back in the early 2000s, the ones that survived. Right. We've seen it with the SaaS stocks. We're starting to see it with the AI stocks. I mean, 10 years ago, would anyone think we'd have maybe a dozen stocks or 10 stocks, I think, that are worth $1 trillion? No. Right. So do I think 10 years from now, we're probably going to have a dozen stocks that are worth $10 trillion? I mean, it could be. Could be the case. So if you look at an NVIDIA, you look at an Apple, you look at a Google, you say, okay, well, if these stocks are going to go from a $1 trillion valuation to a $5 or $6 trillion, that means the stock should go 5 or 6x. So to your point, you're right. Maybe it's accounting for valuation in the future. Now, you don't want it to get extended too much. So you look at those blow-off tops when you look at price and volume. You have a consistent line that goes up and to the right. You just don't want to get too far above that with valuation. You want it to be kind of stabilized. And it will always probably stay above, but it'll be a little volatile. Right. I think it just makes more sense when that valuation is a little more reasonable to what historical valuations are. But you are right. When you're coming into a new technology like AI, which none of us know where it's really going to lead, I mean, NVIDIA could open up potentially into our market. So the valuation today might be very reasonable at this point. So it's a hard question to answer. But I just think, as a general rule of thumb, you want something that's a little bit more reasonably valued at this point.
Yeah, completely fair.
And that's why I look at some of the other indicators. Again, you don't want to use valuation by itself. You don't want to use a technical chart by itself. You want to use fundamentals. You want to kind of couple them all together and kind of build a thesis about an overall stock. Say, okay, is it extended on the chart? Is the valuation too high? Are the fundamentals breaking down? I mean, when you start to kind of check down a checklist of all these different things, that's where you make a determination. Do I own the stock? Do I hold it? Do I sell it? Do I buy it? I think that's the smarter way to kind of approach the market, is you want to go down a checklist of a bunch of different things. And you might not be able to check every box, but if you check maybe the majority of them, okay, I should buy this stock right now, regardless of maybe some of the indicators that might be a little bit extended.
Yeah, I agree 100%. There's a good question from Dirk here. With his longer hold time, does Chris trade around his position? What kind of drawdowns does he find acceptable?
Yeah, so in the long-term account, drawdowns can go as high as 30%, and that's portfolio-wide. So 2022 is a really good example. There's a lot of those FANG-type stocks, your Johnson Johnson's, Procter & Gamble's. Those are stocks that I've owned for many, many years. I held them all. A lot of people ask me, why didn't you sell those stocks? Well, these are stocks I established positions in nearly a decade ago, and these are positions I want to add to. And if you look at them over time, generally they do continue to go up. I look to add to them. So you want to look, if you're looking long-term, you have to sustain large drawdowns in your portfolio if you're not going to buy and sell quite often. If you're in a short-term account, you don't want 30, 40, 50% drawdowns. You want maybe max 10 to 15% drawdowns. And if you can even do better than that, that's even better. If you listen to William O'Neill, anything above 7 or 8%, that's about max for him at that point. He does not want to go above 10%. So short-term, you want lower drawdowns. Long-term, you should be able to sustain larger drawdowns. And then over time, and I'm talking decades, and I saw this with my 401k back in 07, 08, my entire 401k came down 34%. I mean, the 401k is up probably fivefold since then. So when you look at it, it's a tiny little blip on a chart. When you look long-term now over 20, 25 years, did it hurt at the time? Yes. Did all the 401ks come down pretty significantly last year? They did, but now they're all going right back up again. So long-term, I think it's okay. You can sustain those drawdowns. You can kind of weather them. Short-term, you don't want to weather large drawdowns. I mean, that can basically blow out your account, if you will.
Yeah, excellent. I wanted to ask this question because you mentioned, looking at hindsight, it's easy to identify stage one, stage three, stage four. Do you have any tips for identifying in real time, where we're at? And could you maybe run through, I don't know if there's kind of a mental checklist that you go through when you're looking at your positions on the weekend and making decisions, but could you talk about maybe your routine and what you consider to analyze in real time, where we're at, what should my action be in response to that?
Yeah, definitely. So look where the market's at. Where's the market? Is the market uptrend or downtrend? Is it above the 200 days or below the 200? So I'll say 200 day is my main indicator. I want to know if the market's trading above that or below that. When it's trading below that, that's what I'd say cautious territory. When it's back above it, I'd say that's positive territory. And that's, okay, you're open to go out and buy some positions. Same thing with individual stocks. I want to see the stocks above the 200-day moving average. A lot of folks were saying, as we're coming out of late 22 into early 2023, some stocks were up 40, 50, 60%, but still below that 200-day moving average. Why wouldn't you buy those? Well, I don't want to buy them because they might fail when they get back to that 200-day. If a stock's going to go up five or six fold, I don't care about the first 50%. I just want to be on the right side of the market. I want the odds to be in my favor. So the key thing I look for is when I'm screening stocks and I get a list of maybe 50 stocks on the screen, first I want to see, are they above the 200-day moving average? If they're above the 200-day, great, I'm interested. If they're not, I'm not interested right now. Doesn't it mean that I won't put it on a watch list for the future, but I just want to be trading on the right side of the market, meaning the risk is in my favor. So those are really the first things I look for. When it comes to the cycles, whether you're stage one, stage two, stage three, stage four, I'm looking across a collection of stocks, not just one individual stock. How many other stocks are probably looking like they're all in a stage three right now? How many other stocks are in a stage two right now? So here we are in actually almost mid-2023, the year flying by. We have a number of different stocks that are in stage two or just entered stage two. So generally, in my mind, we're in an uptrend in market. Now, can that change tomorrow? Yes. But right now, stocks are breaking out and stocks are going higher. So We're now in a stage two uptrend in market at this point in time. So I just want to look generally across the board. As I'm looking at those 50 stocks on any given night or over the weekend, if I'm looking at 50 stocks and 30 of them are in a stage two breakout, well, then I know the market's generally healthy and we're starting to break out and move higher. And that gives you the green light to say, okay, go and start establishing positions at this point. Now, if you're on the flip side, as we were in late 2021, you had some really great uptrends over many years, but then we saw dozens of stocks starting to enter that stage three into stage four. They were breaking down. They were missing estimates. After earnings, they were having major drops after hours. They were all dropping below the 200-day moving average. I mean, right there, that was the sign in real time. And I did a really good analysis from September to December of 2021, where I started to map a lot of this out in real time. What was going on? Why was I moving the cash in October, November? Things were breaking down. I didn't know if I was going to be right or wrong. I just knew things were breaking down. It was time to take some money off the table at that point in time. So in real time, you want to look at it collectively. It's not just one individual stock, not just one industry. You want to see multiple industries, dozens of stocks, all pretty much doing the same thing or similar things. And then you can generally know what trend we're in or what stage or cycle we're in the market.
Yeah, that's one of the things, you know, when the stock enters a stage two, we never know how far it can go. And when a stock enters a stage four, we don't know, you know, how far it can fall. So therein lies both the opportunity and the risk. So I think that's important. Yeah, a few more questions, Chris. There's a good one from MM. With a full-time job and the weekly chart, how does Chris place his trades? Does he prepare open orders at weekly pivots? Basically, how would you execute, I guess, both your buys and sells?
Yeah, so my cell phone's sitting on the desk right here. With cell phones and apps nowadays, I'll look over the weekend usually. It's usually on a Sunday, and I'll go through and say, okay, is there anything I really want to buy this week? What am I looking at? What earnings are coming out? Or any key indicators where maybe I'll say I want to get to the stock? I usually start to build a watch list of stocks that I'd like maybe get into, and then I look for certain levels that I'd like to buy. And then I set up alerts in the actual trading system itself. So TD Ameritrade was really my primary trading system for all these years. If I'm looking to buy a stock, say like Mobileye, hey, I want to buy it if it goes above $40 a share. Now I'm just making this up, but I do own the stock. But if it goes above 40, I'll get an alert on my phone. I don't put automatic buys in. Basically, I'll get the alert on my phone. It will text me. My phone will buzz. If I'm not in a meeting, if I'm not with a client, you know, I'll pull out my phone. I'll take a look at the chart real quick. Say, yep, I want to go buy it, and I'll buy that market. I typically buy and sell at market. I don't really like, now if I'm going to go on vacation or if I'm going to be in a meeting all day, maybe I'll put a limit buy in. It's okay. I want to grab it at 40. I'll put the limit buy in. Or I want to sell it at 50. I'll put the limit sell in at that point. But I'm mostly a market buyer and a market seller, like on the spot, right on my app, right on my phone. Couldn't do this in the past, but I can do it now. So it's pretty reasonable. I'm fairly flexible throughout my day. So I have the opportunity to do that where I can kind of either sign onto a computer or just go right into the app itself. I don't set hard stops either. I used to, and I felt like I just got sold out of too many stocks that would recover intraday. So say you own a stock, it's at 25 and you want to sell it at 20. You have stocks that will drop down to maybe 17, 18 intraday, but then end the day at 24. And too many times I felt like I got burned getting sold out of position that then went on to maybe grow to $40 or $50 a share. But I got sold out because of some BS market mover type intraday action. I typically look at end of day data. Now, if I get an alert during the day where a stock is now violated a position where I want to sell, I'll just go and I'll sell it at the market itself. Mm-hmm. Now, if I don't get that, and then a lot of us get caught in these after the market, we can all trade in extended hours as well. But if, say, earnings come out and a stock starts to get rocked, you just trade it after market then. Or the next day, usually what I'll do is I'll wait until the market opens and I'll let the first hour happen, and then I'll make my decision after the first hour. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it goes down even more, sometimes it actually rebounds a little bit. And if you're looking to get out of a stock, even if it's down 20, 30%, maybe you recover maybe 6, 7, 8% after that first hour. And then you get out of the stock at that point. That's typically what I do. I'm very discretionary. I'm not mechanical. I don't have system trades that are set up in the system with my broker. It's more discretionary. I know where I want to get in. I know where I want to get out. I know where I want to lock things in. I'll just go do it at the market.
Yeah, fantastic. We've got time for maybe one more question before wrap up. This one from Ivan. Chris, I'm aware that you did not sell some positions in 2021 based on your Twitter. What would you do differently going back and I guess playing out that situation again?
So it's always easier to say in hindsight what you would do because now we know what the outcome is.
Right.
I did sell portions of positions in 2021, but not full positions and held on to them. Like I said, I think my biggest mistake was Teladoc. And I think the connection was emotional. What I should have did is I think my lesson learned from 2021 and understand, I went through 07, 08, and I also went through 2000, 2002. And I was very young back then, but I've seen this a couple different times now. I've gotten a little better each time. And I think I saved a lot of money by the sales I made, but I still had losses in 2022. I should have sold full positions. I think as I saw the market fully go into a stage four decline, I should have just cut them all. And I remember times looking at the screen and saying, I should just sell everything right now. And I didn't do it. I'm not quite sure why mentally I didn't do it. Certain companies I just liked. I liked the product or service. I used the product or service. And I just wanted to own that company. I think that was the mistake. It's almost like that little marriage you get when you buy a stock. You shouldn't be married to the stock, but certain times you get married to certain positions and you don't want to sell it for whatever reason. The mistake I made in some of these positions is maybe I got too married to them. So I think next time, I think if this happens next time or when it happens next time, because it will happen again, I'll sell a portion of position. And if it continues to fail, just get out of it. As I said in the presentation, you can always get back in. So I think that's my big decision. Don't let tax implications really dictate what you're doing either. Sometimes you'll be like, oh, well, it's November. I don't want to sell. I don't want to take this big gain that I have in this stock this year. But then from November to December 31st, stock might drop another 40%. And you would have been better off just selling with the profit and paying the taxes. So I try not to let taxes dictate when I buy or sell either, specifically when I sell. But yeah, I think I could just get better at maybe selling full positions or having that initial sell and then selling the rest of the position if it continues to not work out the way I see it. And this is where technicals come more into play. Because as you saw at late 2021, a lot of stocks still had some really strong fundamentals. And I think that kept me in a bunch of these stocks as well. Because the fundamentals were just still very strong. It's like, you know what? Technicals are telling me sell, sell, sell. Fundamentals are saying, yeah, hold on to some shares.
Yeah, perfect. And I don't know if you read my mind or saw Lance's comment on the stream, but he was going to ask you whether you ever let tax implications affect his decisions. Taking long-term cap gains, let alone short-term gains on technical break, can be brutal if a month or two later technicals are reclaimed.
The idea, so if you're near the end of the year or you're coming up on a long-term or short-term, yes, I will. If we're close, I want to go to long-term capital gain, not short-term, of course. But if you're just in the middle of a random year and things are going on, I don't even think about taxes. I just make my decision. If it's time to sell, it's time to sell. And that's it. Just get out. If we're at the top of the market and you have a really big gain, you know you're going to get hit by the tax ban, I'd rather pay those taxes. If you're paying the taxes in a year, it's a sign that you were successful throughout the year. It's right. Not a bad thing. But if you're close to that, hey, could it switch from a short to long term? Yeah, I think all of us want to make that long term implication. Or if you're sitting there at the end of December, you don't want to deal with it with this tax year, you let it slide into January and you say, okay, I'll deal with it in January at that point. I did a little bit clean at the end of 2022 as well. I had a bunch of losses from 2022 shares that I held, and I made sure I dumped them all in December so I can write them off in my taxes and kind of just write down some of the gains I have from prior positions, if you will.
Yeah, excellent. Chris, this has been really great. Where can people learn more from you, your process, and any kind of last words to leave everybody with today?
Yeah, so if anybody wants to find me online, I'm under the handle of C Peruna. So that's C-P-E-R-R-U-N-A. It's in the presentation.
Bottom left right now.
The bottom left-hand side. You can find me there. I do have a website. That's my name as well. It's chrisperuna.com. I'm not quite as active on the website anymore, but there's a wealth of knowledge from past years. There's probably close to 500 different posts or articles I've written there over the number of years. And it'll give you a lot of insight into how I trade and the basis of when to buy, when to sell, fundamental analysis, technical analysis, things along those lines. But I'd say I'm most active just on Twitter these days. And I say that's where people can find me. Reach out to me, send me a private message, write to me on Twitter itself. And I try to get back to everything. I mean, one thing I'll say with Twitter is I start off with 2, 3, 4 followers back in 2009. Never thought in a million years I'd have 6 figures in followers. I mean, it just blows my mind that people follow me because I don't do this professionally. But I love it and I love to talk to everyone. I try to get back to everybody. If I miss a comment or question, ask it again. It's not because I'm intentionally missing it. Sometimes I'm just very busy with just general life, with my family, with my work and everything else. I don't get to everything. I don't see everything. And Twitter's a little quirky sometimes. Not every comment pops up on my stream of my notifications. So sometimes I have to go back and see, hey, did I miss some questions that are pretty good that I want to answer here? But I try to be as interactive as possible. Some still come engaged with me online and have some fun. And just understand this is an imperfect game. We're going to have losses. We're going to have wins. Nobody's going to be 100% right. I think that's just the one thing with FinTwit. People get a little anxious. Well, why weren't you right on this? Or why didn't you do that? Hey, we're all learning. And here at 45, I think I'm better than I was at 25. I hope maybe I'll be better at 65 than I hear at 45 if I'm given that option to be still around at 65 to be trading in the market. So I think we're all just in this lifelong pursuit of just improvement. I think someone like a Stan Weinstein, he could probably talk to that. He's probably been in the market longer than I've been alive. You keep learning every day. You never stop learning in the market.
Yeah,
so that
sure.
Last thing, I love doing it. I really enjoy it. And that's part of the reason why I take part in the conference here and I participate in Twitter is it's something I just generally really love doing and love talking about.
Yeah, great, Chris. Yeah, thanks so much for your time. I'm sure everybody watching got something very useful out of this. So thanks so much. Once again, to everybody watching, make sure to leave a like down below. Go ahead and follow Chris on Twitter.